Our series is on choices, six life-changing decisions that you must make. We've talked about I choose God's love, I choose to forgive, I choose to worship Him, and this morning I choose to walk by faith. My Bible is open to 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7. You already know it. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 7. For we walk by faith and not by sight. You know, the Bible presents an entire series of unforgettable walks. There was the walk of God in the garden in the very beginning when He called out the name of Adam and Eve. There was the very hard walk of Abraham up Mount Moriah with his son Isaac in tow. And every step taken by the old man was excruciatingly painful because he knew exactly what God had asked him to do. There was the walk with Moses and the Israelites across a dry path that had been the Red Sea. How about Joshua's triumphant walk with the army of Israel around and around and around the walls of Jericho? I read in the New Testament of two disciples who were walking along the road talking to a stranger about the events that had transpired in Jerusalem with the crucifixion of this Jesus, and unknown to them, the stranger was in fact the resurrected Lord. How about Saul's walk to Damascus that kind of got interrupted? How about the Savior's walk from the Praetorium to Golgotha? Hey, how about your walk? Ephesians 4:1, 1 Thessalonians 2 and verse 12. Walk in a manner worthy of your calling. How many times is the Christian life compared to a walk? But ladies and gentlemen, in my estimation, one of the most unforgettable walks occurred the night that Peter decided to get out of the boat and go walk on the water. It was unforgettable because of what he was walking on. It was unforgettable because who he was walking with. But in Peter's stepping out of that boat, it is essentially an invitation for all of us to do the same, to step out in faith and to do, with God's help, what we could never do by ourselves. I think Peter's walking on the water helps me to understand 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 7 better than anything. We walk by faith and not by sight. There are times when individuals need to get out of their comfort zone and take God by the hand and go for a walk of faith. There are times when churches need to get out of their comfort zone and take God by the hand and go for a walk of faith. Does it involve an element of risk? Sure does. Does it involve an element of fear on our part? Yeah. Does it involve faith? Every time. But one thing is for sure, ladies and gentlemen, if you ever want to walk on the water, the first thing you have to do is get out of the boat. I'm going to turn my Bible to Matthew chapter 14, beginning in verse 22. Matthew 14, beginning in verse 22. Let's read this. Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side while he sent the crowds away. After he had sent the crowds away, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. And when it was evening, he was there alone. But the boat was already a long distance from the land, battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, 3 to 6 a.m., he came to them walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified. And they said, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take courage, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter said to him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And he said, "Come." And Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. But seeing the wind, he became frightened. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately Jesus stretched out his hand, took hold of him, and said unto him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind stopped. And those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "You are certainly God's son." You know, they were only crossing the Sea of Galilee. Jesus, wanting to be alone, had sent them on ahead. He climbed up the mountain to pray. And this was no problem for the likes of Peter and Andrew and James and John, who were by vocation fishermen. I mean, they knew every square mile, every square inch of the Sea of Galilee. They'd spent their whole life there, basically. The other men had grown up in Galilee. They were from around the same region. And so they've crossed many, many times. And so it was not an issue for any of them. But tonight was different. This night a storm blew in. And it wasn't exactly a minor squall. Verse 24 says, the boat was battered by the waves. One of the renderings of that word is, they were tormented by the storm. In fact, in John's account, it's interesting, John chapter 6, he says, they had been rowing 3 to 4 miles against a strong wind. And by this time, it is getting late, and they're getting exhausted. It's somewhere 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. And by this point in time, they're not particularly worried as much about getting the boat to the other side of the lake as they are maybe staying alive. And that's when they saw the shadowy figure of a man moving in their direction. Now, like us, they were convinced they were seeing a ghost. Verse 26 says they were terrified. You know, I've heard people criticize them. I've heard people criticize these men in the boat for not knowing it was Jesus. And I've heard people say, you know, how could they not know it was him? Who else do they think it would be? But I, in their defense, must ask the question, how often do we find ourselves terrorized by fear, battered by the waves of turmoil and trouble and trials in our own lives, and we don't recognize the nearness and the presence of God close to us any more than did they? So maybe we shouldn't be quite so harsh with them. So here's my question. What's Jesus up to? What's he doing, and why is he doing it? You know, hold your finger here. Go over to Mark chapter 6 and verse 48. Look at Mark's account of this same scene. Mark adds a little element that Matthew doesn't. Mark 6 verse 48. Don't lose your spot there in Matthew. We'll come right back. Mark 6 and verse 48 says, seeing them straining at the oars, for the wind was against them, at about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. And then Mark adds this, and he intended to pass them by. Now, as I read them, that kind of caught my eye. He intended to pass them by. What does that mean? And why? You know, there are certain defining moments in Scripture when God presents himself in a certain way to communicate to man an unforgettable, un-get-overable, if there is such a word, message. I read in the Old Testament on one occasion, God put Moses in the cleft of the rock, quote, while my glory passes by. On another occasion, God told Elijah to stand on the mountain, for the Lord is passing by. Here comes Jesus walking on the water, intending to pass them by. Pattern? I know this, that in each of these cases, it is at a critical moment, at a critical time, that God gets somebody's attention. And so whether he appeared in a burning bush or a quaking mountain or here he comes walking on the water, this was God revealing the divine power and presence as only God can. Before Jesus takes these men any further in his mission and in his ministry, he has to get their attention in a way they wouldn't forget. I think he succeeded. He got their attention. You have these 12 disciples in the boat, full of confusion, wonder, disbelief, paralyzing fear. And then one of them puts the pieces together, recognizes the presence of Jesus, and you talk about a light bulb moment. Suddenly, Peter had an idea. I think I'd like to go for a walk. So what I want to do for just a few moments this morning is take that verse, we walk by faith, and connect it to Peter's walking on the water and see if we can learn anything about what walking by faith means. So I'm going to leave you this morning with four very simple facts, four very simple points that I draw from this. So if you're taking notes this morning, unless you just have one of those photographic memories, you may want to write these down because somebody invariably will come out and say, now what was point number three? Okay, here they are. Four facts about what this means to walk by faith using the example of Peter. And by the way, I think this would help any of us. I think it would help any church. I think it would help any individual who's trying to walk by faith. Number one, if you're going to walk by faith, write this down. The first thing you got to do is get out of the boat. There are some scenes that just cannot be captured on canvas by an artist. Leonardo da Vinci was a tremendous talent artist. But I must tell you, I sort of smile every time I see his very famous painting of the Last Supper. Because it's wrong. It's just wrong. I mean, for one thing, the artist has them all sitting Western style around the table. Next time you see that picture, look at, he's got them all looking like we're all seated at Cracker Barrel or something, you know? I mean, it's just kind of they're all seated like we sit. Well, they didn't sit like that back then. But the other thing that is striking to me, he's got them all seated on the same side. Kind of odd. A friend of mine who's always got a joke called me one day, and I was working. He said, you got time for the joke of the day? And I said, sure. He said, what was the last thing Jesus said to those guys at the Last Supper? I said, I have no idea. He said, all right, fellas, if you want in the picture, get on this side of the table. So there's your joke of the day. Kind of inaccurate. But so is the paintings you see of Jesus walking on the water. I've seen those. We used to have a big family Bible my dad would read every night, you know, out of this big. And they had pictures in. Remember those big family Bibles? You'd have pictures, color pictures in there. And they had a color rendition of Jesus walking on the water. And it was so peaceful. I mean, Jesus has this beautiful long flowing gown he's wearing, and it's just barely kind of moving in the breeze, and the moon is shining bright, and the sea is a sea of glass. Really? I think there's a storm. I think the storm is so raging that is terrifying to these men. Imagine the size of the waves and the strength of the wind. Put yourself in Peter's place. In the midst of the storm, the Lord is passing by and issues you an invitation to get out of the boat and come to Him. So you have a choice. Do I get out of the boat and take the first step on the water, or do I stay in the boat? The boat represents the safe place, at least in our thinking. The boat represents the secure place, the comfortable place. The water is rough. The waves are high. The wind is very strong. And if I get out of the boat, I might not make it. If I get out of the boat, I might fall. If I get out of the boat, I might fail. I might drown. But on the other hand, if I don't get out of the boat, there's a guaranteed certainty that I'll never walk on the water. You say, well, what is all, I don't understand. Okay, here it is. Every one of us has a boat. Your boat is what represents safety to you. Your boat is your security. We see kids every once in a while, they'll have a security blanket. Goes with them everywhere. Well, kids aren't the only ones that have those, by the way. The rest of us have them. We hide them. But your security blanket, your boat, is where you're tempted to put your trust. Matthew 6, 19 through 21, where a man's treasure is, there will his heart be also. And so some people, money is their boat. As long as I've got it in the bank and I'm safe and secure in that way, then that's my boat. With other people, it is their vocation. We talk about job security. With other people, it's relationships. It's personal family relationships or those of friends. With other people, it's success. That's their boat. On one occasion, Jesus asked the rich young ruler to get out of his boat. And he didn't want to get out of his boat because he had a really nice boat. He had a yacht, we might say. But every one of us has a boat where we are tempted to put our trust. Churches, by the way, have boats. Sometimes a church building can become a boat. Do you know that? That it becomes all about a building, brick and mortar. Sometimes tradition can become a boat. Somebody suggests some way of doing something that's still biblical and scriptural, but maybe a different way. And somebody pipes up and says, oh, that's not the way we do it here. This is the way we do it here, and we ain't going to change. And so tradition becomes our boat. Sometimes saving money is more important than saving souls. And that can become a church's boat. I've noticed two things. I've noticed that people like to stay in their boat. And secondly, I've noticed they don't like somebody else coming along and rocking it. But ladies and gentlemen, there's times the Lord sends a storm and He will rock your boat. But all the time He's doing that, He's standing there saying, come to me. So my first point this morning is, if you're going to walk by faith, then you're going to have to get out of your boat. You're going to have to get out of your comfort zone. Secondly, if we're going to walk by faith, you have to understand that that's no guarantee. The storm is just going to go away. Sometimes I think if people think, well, if I have faith, these challenges I'm facing in my life will disappear. Or if I become a Christian, the devil's just going to leave me alone. Really? You know, the night Peter got out of the boat, I don't think the storm went away. Did you notice that? Back to Peter. In my mental image, I see Peter, and my wife says I have a very vivid imagination, but that's okay. I see this mental picture of Peter going to the side of the boat, and 22 eyes are watching his every move because they've seen him shoot off his mouth before. And they're thinking to themselves, I wonder how far he's going to take it this time. And Peter goes to the edge of the boat, and in my mind, I see him putting one foot over the side. And all eyes are on him. I see him gripping the edge, and all eyes are on him. I see him putting the other foot over, and all eyes are on him. And I see his knuckles as white as he's holding on. And then Peter does something amazingly religious. He lets go. He abandons his life entrusted into the power of Jesus. And for that moment in time, Peter is beaming and Jesus is smiling. And then it happened. Look in verse 30. But seeing the wind, he became frightened. And beginning to sink, he cried out and said, Lord, save me. Maybe this wasn't such a good idea after all. You see, there's a reality check in all of this. All of a sudden, Peter realized where he was. It's in the midst of the storm. It's in the middle of the night. And now the boat's over there and I can't reach it. And he is paralyzed with fear. Because, ladies and gentlemen, when we read this verse that we know by memory and we spout it out as the solution to everything, which it really is, but we don't sometimes comprehend its meaning. When we walk by faith, that's not going to be easy. There's a guy by the name of Larry Lydon who wrote a book called about risk management. He says, we live in a society that is so fear-driven, we suffer risk lock. It's like traffic gridlock in that we become so afraid we are unable to take the necessary steps that would energize our lives. If you stop and think about it, everything is risky. I read the other day a statistic. 25,000 people are treated in the emergency rooms across this country every year for injuries they sustained when they fell out of bed. Now, all you young people, there's your argument for staying in bed longer. There you go. I just handed that to you on a silver platter. You can take your money and you can stuff it in a mattress. And then you lift it and get a hernia. I mean, it's just, everything is risky. I took my granddaughter to the Kentucky Horse Park in Lexington a couple of years ago. We were going to go horseback riding. And they sat me down and gave me 2 full pages of forms that I must read and sign, consenting that I understood all of the different ways that horses can cause bodily injury and death. And I'm thinking to myself, if her grandmother had been here, they would have never gone. But I looked through all of that, read through all of that, signed it, and we went on a horseback ride. By the way, they put everybody on a horse, and then and they asked, you know, who all had ridden before, and I'd raise my hand, and we'd had horses and stuff. And so they put everybody on a horse, and they saved me till last. And I'm just standing there, and they said, we have a special horse for you. And I'm thinking, that doesn't sound good. And they brought out, they said, his name is Big Boy. They brought out a Belgian horse. Think Clydesdale. Biggest horse I've ever seen in my life. And they said, he doesn't get ridden. He loves to go on a trail ride. He doesn't get ridden often because everybody's afraid of him. Will you ride him? I said, sure. I said, and then I said, how? And they brought me a ladder. I climbed up a ladder to throw a leg over the saddle, and I got on this. I'd never ridden a Belgian horse before, and I got on this thing, and I thought, well, this will be fun. And then I found out why you don't ride Belgian horses. Because their girth is so wide, your legs go this way. And so after about 5 or 10 minutes, I was done, you know. I was done. He was a sweet old horse, but I was done. But my granddaughter had a wonderful time. My point is, everything is risky. If you step up to the plate, you might swing and strike out, but the best ones do. But if you don't, you never know what it feels like to hit a home run. If you don't get out of the boat, you never know the glory of walking by faith. That's true individually. That's true congregationally. But please be advised. Just because you have faith, just because you're a Christian, doesn't mean the storm's going to go away. Third, if we're going to walk by faith, then we accept the storm. We accept the challenges as the price to be paid for growth. To grow our faith. Verse 30 says that Peter became afraid, it says. Here's my question. Did Peter fail? Did Peter fail? Well, I guess that depends upon how you define failure. Did his faith waver?
Yeah.
Did he take his eyes off the Lord?
Yes.
Did he sink?
Yes.
Did he cry out in despair, Lord, save me?
Yes,
yes, yes, yes. He did all those things. Well, he failed. Peter was a failure. Well, maybe not so fast. Maybe the story of failure in the passage is not Peter at all. Maybe the story of failure in the passage are the 11 men who stayed in the boat. They all failed quietly. They failed privately. We don't get up and preach about their failures. It's interesting to me, the only one who bears the brunt of public scrutiny and failure is the only one who had the courage to actually get out of the boat. But because he did, Peter was the only one who knew the glory of walking on the water. He was the only one who knew what it was like to attempt to do something that man cannot do on his own. He was the only one who knew the joy of being lifted up by the hand of Jesus when he could go no farther. And so because he got out of the boat, he shared a moment, a connection, a trust with Jesus the others did not have. Why? Because they were afraid. They were too afraid to get out of the boat. The worst failure for any of us in our lives is not the fear of sinking because we don't have enough faith. Maybe our worst failure is like the 11, we never get out of the boat. You will never grow spiritually until you make the decision to get out of your boat, whatever it is, to get out of your comfort zone. Dads, I speak to you. If you want to lead your family as a God man of steel and velvet, then you're going to have to get out of the boat. You're going to have to set the example of what that means to walk by faith. Moms, you want to teach and train your children and be remembered as the matriarch of faith, then you're going to have to get out of your boat. Elders in the Lord's church, if you want to do the greatest work in the world for God and His people, then you have to lead by example and set the example and challenge God's people and motivate us and cast the vision because you're out of the boat walking by faith. Deacons, you will never make an impact for a church unless you take your work seriously. And that means you've got to get out of the boat. Preachers, same thing. Bible class teachers, ditto for you. Worship leaders, all of us who do various and sundry things. It's easy to just fall into the status quo and wrap ourselves in our comfort zone. But nobody said walking by faith was going to be easy. So what have we said? If we're going to walk by faith, we have to get out of the boat. If we're going to walk by faith, we have to accept the challenges as the price we pay to grow spiritually. Third, if we're going to walk by faith, we have to accept all of those and continue on. And fourth, if we're going to walk by faith, we've got to we understand that we connect with God. There's a lot of reasons to get out of the boat, but the number one reason is the water is where Jesus is, and He says, come. Now the problem is you and I want to comfort code everything in life. We want to build our new boys that we adopted have discovered Legos. And, you know, they made a mistake the other day. One of the boys said, I'm bored. Okay. So we gave them these Legos and put them at the kitchen table. And the next thing I know, they're building all this kind of stuff. They weren't bored anymore. They're just building all this kind of stuff. And sometimes we do that with our lives. We build everything exactly and precisely like we wanted, and because we're going to live in with security. We want everything to be predictable. We buy insurance. We want to insure everything so that we maintain this illusion that I'm in control. And then God comes along and shakes everything up. Sometimes to test our faith. Sometimes He may allow Satan to sift you like wheat. And so our world shakes and our boat rocks. And Jesus stands over there and says, get out of the boat and walk over here where I am. Will you walk by faith? Now, it's easy for me, it's easy for you to make all kinds of excuses as to why we can't do that. Because it's just easier being in our comfort zone boat. We could use various illustrations. Inviting others to come join us in the assembly. Philip said to Nathanael, come and see. He issued him an invitation. Come with me and see. And so we start throwing out all these excuses why we can't do that. Well, what if they won't come? What if they reject my invitation? What if they reject me? But how will you ever know that if you don't get out of the boat? Same thing with hospitality. Oh, hospitality. Well, I'm pretty busy. You know, we live in a very small house. I have to work outside the home. Well, you know, when our kids are grown, when my husband retires, when we have a nicer place, then we can give ourselves to hospitality. Hospitality has nothing to do with any of that. Hospitality is sharing. It is giving of what you have and sacrificing for others. That's what it is. By the way, you know, I've heard probably the last 10, 15 years, we've spent more time defining what hospitality isn't. And you'll hear people say, well, you know, hospitality is not just having people in your home. Got it. Check. But isn't that a part of it sometimes? When was the last time you had brothers and sisters from the church family into your home? I was in a meeting and went to this home this particular evening. It was a young married couple. He was still in grad school and both of them were, I think she was still in school too, and both of them were working, going to school. And they lived in a little bitty house and barely enough room for three of us to get around a little bitty table. And but they were so kind and hospitable. And the rest of that week, I ate with the people who lived in big homes, nice places, and plenty of room and all of that, older people. But it's interesting, as I look back on that week, that's the one place I remember. That stands out to me. Because here was a young couple who didn't have much, but what they did have, they were willing to share. That's hospitality. I did eat one time with another young couple who said to me on the way out of the building that they were newly married and that they'd never had company before. And I thought, uh-oh. And so I went to their home and had supper. And the wife, they asked me if I could bring something. I said, sure. They said, well, we need you to bring a chair. I said, I can do that. So I brought a chair. And so I sat around their table and passed the bowl of peas. It was the three of us, and I noticed there weren't many, so I put some on my plate, and the young bride said, I didn't know how many peas to fix, so I fixed enough for everybody to have 10. So I think I'd taken 15, so I had to put some peas back in the bowl. That's one of those bless their hearts moments, you know. Hospitality. Maybe it's teaching a Bible class. Maybe it's participating in worship service. It's growing your talent. The question is, are you available? Are you willing to get out of your boat? Maybe it's visiting the sick or going to see an elderly shut-in. Maybe it's going to a funeral home. You know, I had people say, you know, I don't like to go to funeral homes because I don't know what to say to people. Well, join the crowd. Get in line. I don't know what to say to people either. But here's what I learned. The people aren't going to remember what you say anyway. But they are going to remember if you show up. Show up. And you young people, show up. That's how you get out of the boat. Maybe it's just being an encourager. Maybe instead of saying, you know, I ought to write this note, I ought to get past the I oughtas and start actually doing some of that. Maybe it's helping other people through hardship. Those of you who've gone through tough stuff and you see others going through something similar, maybe an encouraging word from you may make all the difference in the world. Don't be afraid to get out of your boat and share your story with somebody else if it will help them. There's all kinds of ways we can get out of the boat. And so when I opened my Bible to 2 Corinthians, to that great passage, chapter 5 and verse 7, "We walk by faith and not by sight," I always pause and think of Peter, and I always think of the night he got out of the boat and walked on the water. Because I think somewhere in all of this, there is a lesson that I need to learn. And maybe there's a lesson you need to learn as well. You know, I was told I could go to 10:20, but I'm not going to. Because every once in a while, it's okay to just quit early. So we can all just sit and talk or stand and talk and enjoy being together today. Thank you all for your kindness this morning.